a vast retinue of brains and activists, nostalgic for the excitement of the New Deal and World War II, shared Kennedy's desire to shake America out of its complacency. In the 1950s, Arthur Schlesinger Jr. spoke for this entire circle of progressives, young and old, when he lamented the absent discontents of the American people. Kennedy, like FDR, believed he was a true Democrat, and it would be unfair to label him a fascist. But his obsession with fostering crises in order to whip up popular sentiments in his favor demonstrates the perils of infatuation with fascist aesthetics in democratic politics. Ted Sorensen's memoirs count 16 crises in Kennedy's first 8 months in office. Kennedy created crisis teams that could short-circuit the traditional bureaucracy, the democratic process, and even the law. David Halberstam writes that Johnson inherited from Kennedy crisis mentality men, men who delighted in the great international crisis because it centered the action right there in the White House, the meetings, the decisions, the tensions, the power. They were movers and activists, and this was what they had come to Washington for, to meet these challenges. Gary Wills and Henry Fairley, hardly right-wing critics, dubbed the Kennedy administration a guerrilla government for its abuse of and contempt for the traditional governmental system. In an interview in 1963, Otto Strasser, the left-wing Nazi who helped found the movement, told the scholar David Schoenbaum that Kennedy's abuse of authority and crisis-mongering certainly made him look like a fascist. Everything about Kennedy's politics conveyed a sense of urgency. He ran on a missile gap that never existed and governed based on a heightened state of tension with the Soviets that he labored to create. He constantly spoke the language of danger and sacrifice, courage and crusade. He installed the first Situation Room in the White House. His first State of the Union address, delivered 11 days after his inaugural, was a wartime speech without a war. Kennedy warned that freedom itself was at its hour of maximum danger. "Before my term is ended, we shall have to test again whether a nation organized and governed such as ours can endure. The outcome is by no means certain." Kennedy's adrenaline-soaked presidency was infectious, and deliberately so. His administration launched a massive campaign to encourage the construction of fallout shelters, with various agencies competing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the conversion of schools and hospitals into nuclear bunkers. We think of those duck and cover drills as icons of the 1950s, but it was under Kennedy that they reached the climate of extreme paranoia so often parodied today. The administration distributed 55 million wallet-sized cards with instructions on what to do when the nukes started raining from the sky. If, as the new left so often claimed, the mobilization of youth in the 1960s was spurred by the anxiety of living under the shadow of the bomb, then they have JFK to thank for it. Even Kennedy's non-defense policies were sold as the moral analog of war. He justified more education spending, as Johnson would after him, on the explicit grounds that we needed to stay competitive with the Soviets.